Welcome to People, Places, Planet Pod, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to ensure a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on the rule of law.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. I'm your host, Sarah Backer. The National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, was passed by Congress in 1969, the same year that ELI was founded, and signed into law on January 1, 1970. The act broke new ground as the first major federal legislative effort to incorporate environmental considerations into all government decision-making. Despite significant successes, critics argue that NEPA regulations delay projects and raise costs. In May 2023 negotiations over raising the federal debt ceiling, President Biden agreed to certain changes to NEPA reviews, with the goal of streamlining permitting for infrastructure projects. Joining me today to explain these changes and explain NEPA in greater detail is ELI's very own NEPA expert, Amy Reed. Amy is a senior attorney at ELI who works primarily on domestic law and policy topics, focusing on ocean and coastal protection and restoration, advancing natural infrastructure solutions, and cooperative federalism and intergovernmental coordination. Amy also works with the Institute's Indoor Environments and Green Buildings Program to strengthen policies and programs to reduce indoor air risks. Thanks for joining us today, Amy.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Wow, NEPA expert. That feels like a lot of pressure, but it is true that I've spent a good amount of my time at ELI on various NEPA-related projects and reports and initiatives, but right from the beginning, I want to emphasize that the bulk of what I've learned about NEPA during my time at the Institute and the way I frame these issues in my head is a credit to our colleague Jim McElfish, who was a senior attorney at ELI from the late 80s until 2022, and he is now a senior advisor. And Jim was and continues to be in his advisory role the Institute's true NEPA guru. So a lot of what I'll say today is likely to reflect or be based on his publications and thoughts that he's put in writing, and then my conversations with him over the years.
To start off, what is NEPA?
The National Environmental Policy Act is a law that requires federal agencies to examine the environmental impacts of their proposed activities. It requires agencies to consider alternatives to and the impacts of their actions. It could be an action undertaken directly by an agency, like a construction project, or an action that's authorized by an agency through a permit or permission to a non-government applicant. NEPA established the Council on Environmental Quality, or CEQ, which is an entity that sits within the executive office of the president and has an important role to play in issuing national NEPA regulations, among some other important functions. But I think of NEPA as fundamentally being about three things: informed decision-making by agencies, transparency and accountability, and public participation in the decision-making that impacts our environment.
Thanks, Amy. So why was NEPA created?
NEPA is one of the oldest major environmental statutes in the United States. As you mentioned in your intro, it was enacted in 1970 at the outset of what would come to be known as the environmental lawmaking decade of the 1970s. So it was closely followed by laws like the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, and Endangered Species Act, and is thought of as among these bedrock environmental laws that we have in the U.S. The primary sponsor of the original NEPA legislation was Senator Henry Jackson, and he articulated his purposes for pushing for the law as his sense that, as of the late 60s, our collective knowledge and policies and institutions were not adequate to deal with the growing environmental problems and crises that we were facing as a country, and that we didn't have the legal tools in place to address the environmental problems that are associated with all the economic growth that we were seeing and the increasing complexity of society. And he saw a need for a national policy that would enable us to weigh alternatives and anticipate undesirable side effects that result from decisions. Section 101 of NEPA sets out six national policies in line with Senator Jackson's vision. And as Jim likes to point out, the policy goals set out in NEPA Section 101B actually set out a policy framework that, if your goal was to enable sustainable development and intergenerational equity and environmental justice, like even by today's standards, these policies would look pretty good. However, the federal courts who enforce NEPA obligations against agencies, they've never been interested in trying to enforce the substantive requirements of those policy statements. Instead, courts have taken the role of enforcing the many procedural requirements found mostly in the NEPA regulations using the Administrative Procedure Act. So agencies get sued over process-based issues like failing to adequately consider environmental impacts or evaluate alternatives. And what we're left with is a law that doesn't dictate any particular substantive decision or outcome in order to comply with it. It doesn't outlaw unwise decisions, just uninformed decisions. But even though that statement of national policy is not ultimately what the stakeholders and courts rely on, it remains on the books as the underlying spirit of the mechanisms in the law that are more action-forcing. And the agencies themselves are left to craft their own policies and decisions in accordance with those overarching national policies. And again, the law provides for public accountability and participation. So anyone can participate actively in the environmental impact analysis process during the preparation of an environmental impact statement. So it's really one of the most democratic statutes that we have in that sense. And the federal agency conducting the review and considering the decision is obliged to take those comments seriously, whether they come from a fellow agency expert or the industry or just an individual.
Thanks, Amy. So what types of actions necessitate this environmental impact statement or EIS that you just mentioned?
NEPA requires that before recommending or taking a major federal action as significantly affecting the quality of the human environment, a federal agency must prepare a detailed statement on the environmental impact of the proposed action. An action triggering NEPA can be, as I mentioned before, an agency construction project or a funding decision, can be granting a permit, creating a new program. It really covers a lot of agency activity types. The detailed statement that's required must discuss any adverse environmental effects, which cannot be avoided if the proposal is implemented, and any irreversible and irretrievable commitments of resources if the proposal is implemented. And also, really importantly, it must identify alternatives to the proposed action. That means the federal agency is required to study, develop, and describe appropriate alternatives to whatever course of action it ends up recommending, rather than just sort of decide in advance on the path they want to take and analyzing those impacts and doing it that predetermined way. Alternatives are different actions or combinations of actions that can be taken to address the same purpose and need as the proposed action. And they must include the so-called no action alternative, which is a comparison of how things would unfold under the status quo absent any new action, as well as other reasonable courses of actions that would avoid or minimize adverse impacts to or enhance the quality of the human environment. And I want to unpack a couple more of the key terms that I just used in answering your question. The first is how CEQ and agencies and courts have come to understand the meaning of significant impacts on the environment. Impacts doesn't just encompass direct impacts. The environmental review also has to study indirect impacts and cumulative impacts. This means agencies aren't looking at individual projects or actions in a vacuum. They're thinking about other actions that have happened in the past, things that are happening now, and other things that might happen in the future, and considering how all those actions impacts combine with each other to affect the environment. And this concept is obviously really important when you think about how an EIS tackles climate change impacts or environmental justice impacts, things that can only really be meaningfully understood in the historic and cumulative sense. And the definition of the human environment that might be impacted is also interpreted quite broadly under NEPA. We consider NEPA a bedrock environmental law, but an EIS doesn't only study impacts on natural resources like air, water, plants, animals, and fish. It also studies impacts that an action could have on communities and the people who live and work there. The impacts studied can include health impacts, economic impacts, effects on cultural resources or historic places, and some examples might include economic impacts on local businesses or changes in property values or insurance costs, health impacts of construction activities, how the proposed action would affect employment opportunities for local residents. It's really quite broad.
Thanks, Amy. So can you help us break down the difference between an environmental impact statement, or EIS, and an environmental review?
There are three pathways that can be used to comply with NEPA's procedural requirements to study impacts. The first is that when you have a major federal action with reasonably foreseeable significant impacts on the environment, that triggers a full detailed review and the production of an environmental impact statement, or EIS, which has to explain the anticipated environmental impacts and the impacts of those alternatives, and identify ways in which impacts can be reduced, which we call mitigation measures. It also has to give the public a chance to comment, and that process culminates in a final EIS report and a document known as a record of decision, which reflects the agency's official decision about whether, how, and why to proceed with their selected action. And in circumstances where it's unambiguous from the outset that a decision is going to qualify as a major federal action with significant impacts on the environment, usually an agency will jump right in and start on the EIS process as a first step. But in cases where it's less clear-cut, or perhaps more typically where the agency suspects that an action may not end up having significant effects on the environment, the agency can start with a more concise document called an environmental assessment, or EA. And the function of an EA is to briefly provide sufficient evidence and analysis as to why an EIS is not required, in which case the agency issues what's known as a finding of no significant impact, which you'll hear abbreviated as FONSI, or conclude that the agency needs to proceed to the full EIS stage. And there is one more way that agencies can comply with NEPA, and it actually is the pathway that most federal actions end up taking, and that's known as the categorical exclusion mechanism. So CEQ regulations allow agencies to determine in advance that a whole class or category of actions that it routinely conducts do not normally have a significant effect on the environment. So once a categorical exclusion is adopted after review by CEQ and a public notice and comment opportunity, agencies can use categorical exclusions for activities like routine financial transactions and budget formulation, for things like non-destructive data collection and research, and sometimes for activities on a small geographic scale, like a minor repair to a building or an activity that falls under a certain acreage threshold. But in situations where extraordinary circumstances mean that an activity normally covered by a categorical exclusion could end up having significant impacts, the regulations provide that more extensive analysis is appropriate.
So who conducts and is involved in this process, and what does the process look like?
Well, NEPA applies directly to every federal agency. So number one, each agency is responsible for administering its own compliance with the law in accordance with some overarching procedural regulations that were issued by the CEQ. And each agency has its own NEPA procedures, regulations, and guidelines that it adheres to. CEQ's involvement is mainly issuing and updating, especially recently, those government-wide NEPA regulations. They also issue guidance documents and give advice to agencies. CEQ offers a dispute resolution mechanism and approves proposed categorical exclusions that agencies can use in some situations to document their compliance. And the EPA actually has a special administrative and oversight role where EPA reviews all environmental impact statements and maintains lists of them.
So you mentioned before that NEPA emphasizes public participation. What are the ways that the public can participate in the process?
Yes, public participation is one of the foundational elements of the NEPA process. And there are three main ways for the public to become involved in the EIS process, especially. The first opportunity, and one of the most important, is at what's called the scoping stage. Scoping happens early in the NEPA process. Its purpose is to determine the scope of issues that are going to be addressed in an EIS. So, put another way, this process helps the agency figure out what issues it will study in depth and what issues it can leave out of the EIS. And when an agency starts scoping, it will provide a public notice that explains the proposed action and will ask for input from the public and other agencies and experts about what issues it should study and which alternatives it should evaluate. Often the scoping process will include one or more public meetings, but a point that Jim has hammered home to me over and over again is that scoping is often the best chance the public has to give meaningful input on a proposed action. Raising a relevant issue during scoping means that the agency must either study that issue or provide a reason in writing that it chooses not to. Scoping is also the only real chance for members of the public to identify alternatives for the agency to consider, because consideration of alternatives begins during scoping when the agency identifies a reasonable number of alternatives for assessment and in-depth discussion in the EIS. The next formal opportunity for the public to participate is providing comments on the draft EIS document. After the agency finishes preparing the detailed draft of the study, that document is available for public review and comment for a minimum time, I think it's 45 days, and the public can submit written comments to the agency online or by mail, and often the agency will hold a public hearing about the draft EIS, and members of the public might have a chance to provide verbal comments. The agency then reviews and responds to the comments it received about the draft. modifies its analysis or conclusions where necessary, and provides authorities supporting the final conclusions in the final EIS. The agency must respond to all substantive comments by members of the public on draft environmental impact statements. And the public will also get an opportunity to review the final EIS before the record of decision is issued. So after the comment period ends, the agency reviews and analyzes the comments it received, decides what, if any, changes to make to the EIS, and prepares a final version of the document. That document is available for review and comment before the record of decision is announced, although the federal agency is not required to respond to comments from the public that it receives during this time.
Thanks, Amy, for detailing how the public can be involved. So has NEPA been successful? And how do we measure that success?
For me, this is a nice segue from my last answer, because I think the pinnacle of NEPA success is when an agency makes changes to its intended course of action based on that public feedback and input during the process. NEPA is a law that recognizes that the public can make an important contribution by providing information, new perspectives, and in some cases, unique expertise or experiences that can help the agency staff and the technical experts who are ultimately responsible for making decisions affecting the environment. In the words, again, of Jim McElfish, NEPA is one of the few federal statutes that does not presume that the agency is smarter than the public. And there's some great examples of public participation leading to selection of an alternative that the agency hadn't started with, or to the study of impacts that the agency hadn't thought of. To me, those are the success stories and the reason why we keep encouraging the public to engage, because it really can change how a project unfolds.
Thanks, Amy. So how does NEPA help with climate mitigation and adaptation efforts?
So on the mitigation side, there was a court case in the late 1980s that found that agencies have to, quote, consider mitigation of the impacts of an action being studied and identify opportunities for mitigation, but they don't have to have a full mitigation plan in order to pass muster with the CEQ regulations. So while NEPA and its regulations do require consideration of climate change related impacts, again, it doesn't dictate substantive outcomes, and the ultimate wisdom of agency decisions with respect to the changing climate is still up to the agencies themselves. On the adaptation side, there are some opportunities in the NEPA process to help ensure that adaptation measures like nature-based solutions get their due consideration among alternatives. ELI's Climate Resilience Program recently released a paper, actually, authored by our colleagues Regina Bono and Jared Page, that's meant to be a guide to navigating federal permits and environmental reviews to facilitate use of nature-based solutions. And that report covers NEPA extensively, among a few other federal laws, and among other things, it provides some interesting statistics that kind of help dispel some of the rumors that persist about NEPA being to blame for project delays and nuisance litigation. And you can find that report on the ELI website.
Thanks, Amy. At the top of the episode, I mentioned some changes proposed to NEPA. So how has NEPA evolved since its inception?
For decades, NEPA and its regulations and the judicial interpretations of those laws and policies did not change. CEQ adopted a set of regulations in 1978 that somehow no one sued about at the time. And those regulations were in place mostly unchanged until 2020. But in these last few years, the CEQ regulations have been sort of in flux, and they do continue to be updated. First, in 2020, the CEQ under the Trump administration finalized changes to those government-wide NEPA regulations. In addition to making changes like attempting to eliminate the cumulative impact analysis, those 2020 regulations required agencies to update their own agency-specific regulations to match the national regulations. Previously, and now again, the CEQ regulations were a floor, not a ceiling, of what agencies could do during the NEPA process. Then with the administration change in 2021, the Biden administration decided to tackle its own updates to the CEQ NEPA regulations in two phases. So the first phase of amendments under Biden took effect in May 2022, and that phase basically reinstated many of the original 1978 provisions that had been removed in 2020. A second phase of updates was rolled out in draft form in 2023. Jim wrote a great blog that analyzes some of the changes that are proposed in the phase two regulations. And among the most notable is the fact that for the first time, the federal government is proposing to embody environmental justice practice in the NEPA regulations. So even though the final phase two regulations haven't been issued yet, if they look much like the draft regulations with respect to EJ, it will be a significant step. One other recent development is that in June 2023, the actual NEPA statute was amended for the first time in decades as part of the Fiscal Responsibility Act, which helped resolve a spending showdown in Congress. Mostly, the Fiscal Responsibility Act codifies various provisions that were already found in CEQ regulations and modifies some provisions in an effort to streamline the permitting process through mechanisms like page limits and time limits for preparing environmental impact statements and EAs. But the ultimate implications of the FRA amendments to NEPA and changes to the CEQ regulations really remain to be seen, largely because how these statutory changes and proposed rule changes will be interpreted in subsequent litigation remains to be seen.
Okay, so Amy, you said that the federal government is proposing to embody environmental justice practice. So what exactly do you mean by this?
I'll give you some examples of how the proposed regulations, if finalized, will integrate environmental justice explicitly into the NEPA review and decision-making process. Firstly, the proposed actions include a definition for environmental justice that for the first time would define EJ as the just treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of income, race, color, national origin, tribal affiliation, or disability, in agency decision-making and other federal activities that affect human health and the environment, so that people, number one, are fully protected from disproportionate and adverse human health and environmental effects and hazards, including those related to climate change, the cumulative impacts of environmental and other burdens, and the legacy of racism or other structural or systemic barriers, and number two, have equitable access to a healthy, sustainable, and resilient environment in which to live, play, work, learn, grow, worship, and engage in cultural and subsistence practices. And that definition builds upon both the longstanding EPA procedural definition of EJ, which emphasizes fair treatment and meaningful involvement, as well as some of the terminology used in recent executive orders from Biden on EJ. Another way that the proposed update would help ensure that EJ is fully integrated into agency NEPA practice relates to proposed additions to the policies on public engagement. So proposed section 1501.9 prescribes approaches for meaningful engagement and outreach that direct agencies to, quote, consider what methods of outreach and notification are necessary and appropriate based on the likely affected entities, the scope, scale, and complexity of the proposed action and alternatives, the degree of public interest, and other relevant factors. Another place EJ is integrated more explicitly in the proposed rule is in how an agency determines whether the effects of a major federal action are significant and thus trigger that EIS requirement. The proposed changes would include new factors to be considered in this decision, including the degree to which the action may have disproportionate and adverse effects on communities with environmental justice concerns, and the degree to which the action may adversely affect rights of tribal nations that have been reserved through treaties, statutes, or executive orders. Then at the same time, the proposed definition of effects in the proposed rule encompasses, quote, disproportionate and adverse effects on communities with environmental justice concerns, whether direct, indirect, or cumulative. And then as one last example, the proposed phase two rule provides that the agency should, where relevant and appropriate, incorporate mitigation measures that address or ameliorate significant adverse human health and environmental effects of proposed federal actions that disproportionately and adversely affect communities with environmental justice concerns.
Thanks, Amy, for helping us break down NEPA. And it was great to have you and also the words of Jim McElfish on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Sarah, and I'd be happy to pop back on as some of these outstanding issues play out in courts and agencies.
Thank you for tuning in to People, Places, Planet Pod, brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute. We would like to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and ideas to podcast@eli.org. And if you're interested in learning more about our work, attending one of our events, reading our publications, or becoming a member, please visit our website at www.eli.org.